Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Welcome to Through the Smoke. Here we go again. Welcome everybody again to Firehouse.com Radio. It's a pleasure to have everybody with us today again. Before we get started today, I got a couple items that I want to cover. First is our prayers go out to the folks in London. We're shocked again this morning at the news. The terrorists again took their chicken shit attitudes and decided to, what I call, sucker punch the folks in London this time. But they obviously remain strong. It looks like at this point, in the time we're recording this, around 5 o'clock on the 7th, looks like there's 40 dead and 700 injured. So our hearts and prayers go out to the citizens in London, and especially the firefighters and the ambulance personnel that are operating there as well. So we express our condolences and certainly hope fire departments are maintaining their vigilance in this country, because I'm sure it's not the last time we've heard from those cowards. Last show, we spoke about the National Firefighter Stand Down. I had Gary Breeze on the show. And just a little quick follow-up. Since the stand down, there's been 46,000 fire departments that have downloaded the information and guidelines on how to conduct the stand down at their firehouses. So that's pretty impressive. I think it's made a difference. And somebody wrote in and saying that fire departments should not do the stand down on a regular basis. Every day should be stand down day. And my comment back to that is, sure, just like every day should be Fire Prevention Day, but every year we have a Fire Prevention Week to remind everybody how they're supposed to conduct themselves. And I guess another example would be, we have Valentine's Day every year. You're supposed to act like you do on Valentine's Day every day, but we don't. So little reminders are helpful for everybody, and I think the national stand down needs to be a thing that is continued on a regular basis. We ought to maybe do it monthly. It seems to have worked. There appears to be some good numbers. I do have some bad news today on a firefighter line of duty death that occurred today. Rockdale County, Georgia, fire apparatus operator Tom Hurlbert of Engine Company 3 in Rockdale County died in the line of duty. He was operating his apparatus with crew during the hurricane force weather they had going on down there today, and he died behind the wheel. The officer of that apparatus was able to stop the rig. Nobody else was hurt. They grabbed their AED and their EMS equipment, but it was unfortunately to no avail, and we regret the death of firefighter Hurlbert from Rockdale County, Georgia, who passed away today. Wow, Through the Smoke, we sure appreciate what response we've got. The emails are incredible. We had thousands of folks download the show and listen to it. So hopefully it's of value to you in enhancing your lives, careers, career volunteer firefighters. We focus on everybody who crawls down hallways, so to speak. We're working on the sound quality. The folks at Firehouse.com are aware that some of you were concerned it didn't sound as good as you had hoped. Of course, neither do 800 megahertz radio, so maybe it's something you guys will all get used to. If you have any ideas, any input, send us your comments and ideas and thoughts to radio at firehouse.com, and we'll be glad to take a look at that. Before we get on to today's subject, which is going to be firefighters operating on the roadways, just a comment and a recognition to some firefighters in Northwest Ohio. Actually, the Northwest Ohio Volunteer Firemen's Association had their annual convention last month, had more than 30 pieces of apparatus, firefighters, adults, people hanging off the apparatus, operating while driving open beer containers, blasting horns and sirens. A person fell off one of the fire trucks, broke an arm. A young girl nearby watching the parade says she was shown digital pictures of naked women parading around the Northwest Ohio or the fire station in that area. Public say they saw firefighters urinating outside of dumpsters. Firefighters on the apparatus were driving around yelling obscenities and encouraging young women to lift their tops for beads. One person said there were more beads at this parade than you'd ever find at New Orleans. A Girl Scout leader was sexually harassed at her booth in front of her troop. The band stopped playing and left because too many naked people were on stage. So congratulations to the Northwest Ohio Volunteer Firemen's Association for once again making firefighters all over look like a bunch of jackasses. Maybe it's time you folks up there rethink your priorities. Maybe understand that not only do you represent your own departments, but you represent all of us as well. Today's subject on Through the Smoke is firefighters operating on the roadways. And some of you out there on the internet have been reading an article that's been floating around amongst emails and different blogs and stuff. And the article is entitled, How Safety Forces Hose the Public. And that article, or commentary, if you will, was written by a gentleman named Ron Cole. Ron runs a website and a blog at machinedesign.com. It's an engineering site, but a site where he offers his comments on life stuff, his observations in life, and how he sees it. Some of it's quite interesting. I've spent some time looking at it. Essentially, Mr. Cole's latest commentary from a civilian standpoint, because he's not a firefighter, expresses his frustration with fire departments, EMS, and cops blocking roadways for no justified reason. His commentary is posted here on our site, so if you look right here on firehouse.com, you'll see the commentary. But a few of Mr. Cole's comments include his thoughts that years ago, if there was a fender bender, a single police car would show up, and as soon as possible, the police would have the damaged vehicles moved to the shoulder so all four lanes would remain open on the highway. Then a fire department ambulance would show up with the police car, regardless of whether or not anyone was injured. And he also mentions that the police also started to leave vehicles wherever they collided instead of clearing the roadways, unmindful of the terrible traffic tie-ups this creates. And then next, as he started observing over time, more police cars would show up at some of these accidents with ambulances. Then over time now he sees fire trucks are showing up on alongside of ambulances and police cars. And his concerns are with all these vehicles spread over the highway, every minor collision essentially shuts down the freeway. In his commentaries, he further observes that there are rarely any fires, so he doesn't understand why fire trucks are on the scene, and he thinks the only purpose of additional police cars seems to be adding to the congestion. Then he read some newspaper articles that began to shed light on the matter, or did some research on that, and I've got Mr. Cole on with us today. He'll have a chance to comment in a little while, as well as some other guests we have. And in looking at these articles, what they revealed is that, in his opinion, and the writer of these articles, opinions, is that typical big city fire departments today are woefully underworked. Now, I would say if you ask the average firefighter, they wouldn't say that. They'd say they're understaffed and overworked, but we'll talk about that in a little while. Firefighters today spend most of their runs, according to Mr. Cole's commentary, taking elderly people to emergency rooms for sprained ankles.
That was from the Washington Post.
Okay, good, great. And we appreciate that, and I'll get to you in just a second.
Okay.
That's all right. And it very, very well may have been in that one particular reporter's observation. It's certainly not the case in my department, and we'll see what others have to say as well. More or less, it's typical at one Washington, D.C. firehouse, where it says here, where the crew can't recall being on a significant fire in the last 18 months. I kind of find that hard to believe, but that's what was written. So one reason firefighters respond to auto accidents is to relieve their boredom, according to Mr. Cole's comments. I would say, we'll get to you in a minute, Ron, I just have a few more comments, but I've only known you a little while, I've read a lot of your commentaries, I can't believe you believe what you read in the newspapers, but that we'll talk about that later. I certainly always consider newspaper articles with a grain of salt. Mr. Cole further expressed frustration that, in his opinion, the biggest reason, however, is the fact that many communities now charge to send fire trucks to accident scenes. So his theory is that by sending more trucks, they'll derive more revenue. A firefighter hands a clipboard to the drivers involved in the accident, asks them to sign a form, which is probably a release form, which most drivers do relatively easy without a question, and bingo, the driver's signature lets the fire department ding the driver's insurance company for a charge. Where he's up in the Cleveland area, he says the city of Cleveland now charges $590 to send a fire truck to a minor accident, and it charges $850 to free people from a wreckage. And the city's hoping to generate $2.5 million annually. He further writes, how bad does it get? Recently, not far from his house, there was a minor accident, and he saw not only three police cars, an ambulance, a fire truck, and a fire chief on the scene as well. And his concerns are the revenue generated by responding to accidents help cities perpetuate the overstaffing of fire departments. So you'll have a chance to read this, but basically Mr. Cole is concerned, a frustrated driver out there in the public. We've all been caught up in accidents, whether they be minor or major, wishing we could get through traffic. But there's another side of this story. And the other side of the story is from a public safety standpoint and those who are involved. Now, I could speak all day. Actually, I was struck a couple years ago on I-71. We were off the roadway. We didn't have it blocked in the area we were operating. And a vehicle, actually another fire department's vehicle, they didn't set the brake properly, and their vehicle ran into me and crushed me between their vehicle and the wreckage. I was one of the lucky ones. I was okay. I had a compression injury, nothing serious. That's the most serious highway situation that's occurred to me. But I know there are others out there that have better knowledge of this than I do, and that was my motivation today, is to take Ron and get his comments and discuss that, but also have some folks who have some excellent perspective on emergency operations on the roadway. We'll be back in just a minute with our guests.
Is it sometimes a little hard to see through the smoke? Do fire service, rescue, and EMS issues work you up just a bit? Maybe more than just a bit? If they don't, check your pulse. It's normal for firefighters and responders to get worked up over hot issues when you love the job so much. Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, Firehouse.com commentator and Firehouse Magazine columnist, hosts Through the Smoke, an internet broadcast and podcast that addresses issues impacting all firefighters, such as safety, health, and morale. Don't ignore the issues and maintain the status quo. Take an interest in issues that impact you, the frontline responder. Join Billy, special guests, and firefighters around the country and the world regularly on Through the Smoke, only on Firehouse.com.
We're back on Through the Smoke. We've got some guests with us today. Ron Cole, who wrote an article or an editorial or commentary, whatever you want to call it, about his concerns on why fire departments and EMS personnel and police block highways for what appears to be minor incidents, delaying traffic and commerce and what have you. But also, I've got two other guests with us today who I feel have excellent perspective and first-hand knowledge on emergency operations on the highways and the roadways. The first guest is Jack Sullivan. Jack is the Director of Training for the Emergency Responder Safety Institute, which is respondersafety.com. Jack is also a retired firefighter and fire department safety officer with 25 years on the job, including time as a deputy chief, full-time safety consultant, and fire service safety advocate. Jack really became deeply involved in public safety roadway issues when a deputy chief of his fire department, that's deputy chief, Jack, is that correct?
No, firefighter.
A firefighter from his fire department was struck and killed on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. So welcome, Jack Sullivan. Thanks for being here, Jack.
Thanks, Billy.
I'll get to you in a second. Let me just introduce everybody, and then we'll have some lively discussion. Our second guest is a young woman I've come to know over the last couple months named Selena Schmidt. Selena's 3 years in EMS. She's a paramedic in the Fort Worth, Texas EMS system, which is MedStar, is that correct?
That's correct.
She's a paramedic with MedStar. And if you have gotten your July issue of Firehouse Magazine yet, Selena and several firefighters and her partner are featured in the Close Calls article in both the July and August issues. We made it a two-parter on her situation. Essentially, Selena arrived on the scene of a car accident in heavy rain this spring and began assisting her patient that needed extrication from the vehicle. Her partner and Selena were on the inside of the vehicle getting the patient stabilized when a vehicle traveling on the interstate hydroplane slid sideways into the scene. The vehicle hit and struck three firefighters and then hit the stretcher in the vehicle that Selena and her partner were in. The stretcher impacted her at 60 miles an hour, according to the investigation, striking Selena in her abdomen and knocking her unconscious. She says she saw it coming but had no time to even yell. She thought it was all over. She sustained life-threatening injuries and had been in the hospital for a week following surgery. Selena's injuries included a punctured colon, a lacerated small intestine, a left pneumothorax, and for those of you like me who are not EMS folks, that's a collapsed lung, broken ribs, 7 fractured vertebrae in her back, and many bruises all over. All of her injuries were blunt trauma and internal injuries, and Selena is still recuperating but has clear focus that she is going to be returning back to work hopefully this fall, early winter, with hopefully some good health care and some good prayers to her. So we welcome Ron, Selena, and Jack. And before I continue, I want to share some incidents or some fire and EMS struck by incidents from the year 2000 to 2003, just to bring up the issue of why most firefighters and EMS personnel want the roadway blocked. Now, and that's a big statement, because in some cases it should be, and perhaps other cases it shouldn't be, and that's what we're going to talk about today. In 4 years of data compiled by Jack Sullivan, there was 121 struck by incidents total for fire and EMS. That doesn't include the police folks. 137 fire EMS responders have been struck. 40 fire EMS, in other words, 40 firefighters or EMS personnel have been killed in the last 4 years because they've been struck on roadways. Nearly 100 firefighters and EMS personnel were injured, and 34 pieces of apparatus were struck. So welcome to Ron, Jack, and Selena. Ron, I'll give you, as our guest and our non-fire guest, a few seconds to reiterate your comments, and then you, Jack, Selena, and I will have a discussion on the issue. So, Ron, there's a few seconds. It's all yours.
Okay, well, I must live in an insular world here. I live in Cuyahoga County, Ohio, which is Cleveland is the central city. And I normally, I'm working from home from now, but I normally take a freeway in, and I've driven it every day for 20 years or more. It's three or four lanes in each direction. I think it's four lanes in each direction. And just as my editorial said, there's always been accidents on that road. And the response to it has enlarged over the years, as I've reiterated or as I've posted in my editorial. And it's just like lately that I've noticed that it went from one police car and an ambulance, police car and ambulance, fire truck, two police cars, fire truck and ambulance, and who knows what else. Now, people have written me a lot of emails. I've gotten 200 emails on this, and I know why you block the road, and I know why you park the fire apparatus there. But I still have to think there's a better way to do it, because the incidents of vehicles striking or sliding into accident scenes in our area is very low. I can remember one within memory. It was last year, I think. And it did. A tractor trailer did hit a hook and ladder truck that was parked there. But I tend to look at these things as isolated incidences, and I do think that what we're getting is an over the top response to these things. I get there's got to be a better way to work an accident scene and work it safely other than blocking the whole road, which is what we tend to have now.
Sure. Well, Ron, maybe, and again, I'm going to turn to Jack next, because Jack has done a lot of in-depth research on this, and he has an opinion, and it may surprise you what his opinion is. But maybe the reason that these incidents are not as frequent is because we are blocking. And when I say blocking now, I don't mean shutting down an entire eight-lane highway. I'm saying blocking the lane and perhaps the lane next to an operation so firefighters and the medics can work safely and extricate a patient. But based upon your comments, Jack, why the changes in the last couple of years? Why would Ron or any civilian see suddenly we're sending more equipment on that? My second question to you, Jack, is there a better way to do it, as Ron asked? Is there a better way?
I wish I knew the answer to that question. I think what our group is trying to do is to educate everybody about, number one, the issue that's out there, and I appreciate the fact that Ron and his section of the country may not see a number of these incidents, but they are happening, and they unfortunately happen on almost a daily basis around the country. In March of 1998, 10 of our personnel in the Lionville Fire Company were operating at a routine motor vehicle accident along the side of the Pennsylvania Turnpike. They were off the operating lanes of the highway. And during the course of that event, a tractor-trailer coming past the scene overturned and slid through the original accident scene and struck 10 of our personnel, killing one and putting the other nine in the hospital. And that was a big wake-up call for me at the time. I was not at the incident. I was not involved with that specific call. But I've been working on this issue ever since, and the investigations and research that I've done shows that it's a growing problem. It continues to get worse every day, driven by the type of drivers that are out there, the fact that they're driving distracted by a variety of things, from hamburgers and breakfast sandwiches to cell phones, navigation systems in their cars, the screaming kids in the back seat, drugs, alcohol,
And that's all at the same time, right, Jack?
Yeah, all at the same time in some cases, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And the speeds are increasing, and the capabilities of the automobiles and vehicles that people are driving is beyond the capabilities of some of the drivers. And what's happening is we're getting stuck out on roadways where speeds of passing traffic exceed 65 miles an hour, and people do not have the reaction time or ability to avoid the folks who are running past us as we're trying to work to clear an accident scene. And that's part of the issue that's out there right now, is that we have to protect and defend ourselves against the motoring public who does not necessarily realize what's going on and take the appropriate action, slow down, and move over as they approach an emergency scene.
I mean, Jack, I'll tell you, we in our district here at Lovell and Sims, we cover I-275 and I-71. And over the last couple of years, and this is to Ron and Selena, everybody else, and Ron, you're certainly welcome to comment, when I get on the scene of a highway accident, the only priority I have anymore is to monitor traffic and try and control traffic. If we've got people in the roadway, if we've got a critical patient, minor patient, I'm no longer even paying attention to that. I am so concerned and sometimes scared of the way the folks are driving up there. They're not seeing, I mean, we have plenty of warning lights and plenty of, you know, visible apparatus, but people do not seem to give a damn. People are not paying attention. Their priority is to get where they want. So I guess from my standpoint as a chief fire officer, I could care less if I delay their traffic. I don't care if they got screaming kids. If I need to shut down a lane or two and it causes somebody to be a half hour late, I don't care. Now, that's on the highway. Sometimes later on I'm thinking, ah, it's a shame, you know, or I'll run into my wife or a friend and they'll say, ah, we were backed up for an hour and a half. But we had people were hurt and I had to protect my personnel. Ron?
Okay, well, I don't know. I can't argue with that, but I've given you my view on it. I will say now, I made that reference to a local accident where, again, the response is over the top. People tell me, well, if you ride by, first of all, the letters I get are kind of goofy, and I'm saying it doesn't really reflect well on the fire force, just as your allusions to the volunteer firemen reveal something.
But in that specific case in Northwest Ohio, right?
Yeah, right. But the letters I get kind of indicate a mentality of the same vein. There's a couple points, the two points I make. Okay, the local accident that I witnessed, it was minor. I don't care what anyone says. I crawled by it, looked over. Now, people say, well, I couldn't see that the guy's third cervical spinal something was fractured or something
right,
like that. But I'm saying you can look at a scene, and, you know, it takes an utterly stupid person not to be able to size up what's going on. I know you can't ascertain all the injuries, but I'm saying you can look at it and get a fair idea of what's happening. And what I've seen is in these cases, just like on the scenes I've seen on our freeways, is, yes, I can ride by. I tongue-in-cheek once, I said, I have the ability to ride by and tell whether what all the extent of the injuries are. Well, the firefighting public took me seriously on it. They thought I meant that. They thought I thought I could actually do it. But you can ride by and you can get an idea of what's going on. And from what I'm seeing, and especially like I mentioned that one on a local street, it was an over the top reaction. I don't know how many come, but I say two police cars of. Two fire, a hook and ladder, and I think another one, pumper, and some. I mean, there was just a reaction, a response that was way out of kilter for what happened. These were three cars. One guy stopped, another guy bumped him a little bit, another guy bumped the other one, and there was no damage on any of the cars.
Right, what happens is somebody will dial 911. They'll say there's been a three car accident in front of our house. Dispatcher will say, can you tell if anybody's hurt? Well, it looks like there's a lot of people hurt. So the dispatcher will send perhaps an appropriate response. Now, keep in mind, many, many fire departments in this country, paid or volunteer, are woefully understaffed right now. In the old days, like we were talking earlier, you know, years ago, you might get an engine or hook and ladder company on the scene, and they'd have five or six people on the apparatus. And that is generally adequate, along with an EMS crew, to handle a patient with C-spine injuries. So that's what we're talking about. But in many cities, and I don't know specifically in the city you're at, because I can't speak
for
that.
Well, that was Mayfield Heights, and I don't know what their...
Yeah, I don't know what their staffing is, but we can certainly find out. But in a lot of communities, they're sending one or two firefighters on the apparatus, and that's a ripoff to you and the public when they're doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
So to get four, five, or six firefighters, in some towns, they've got to send three or four pieces of apparatus. And it is inefficient. But when cities continue to cut our budgets and cut us back the way they've been doing, it's a problem. Let me run to Selena for a minute. Selena, you know firsthand the issues of operating on the highway and what can happen. So why don't you reflect a little bit and give us your perspective and comments on what you've heard so far?
Well, actually, I have a very interesting perspective. In fact, when we were talking about, you know, blocking the roadways and it being a 4 or 8 lane interstate, in our case, in this particular accident that I was involved in, our scene involved one vehicle, and that vehicle was not on any of the lanes of traffic.
So to the someone like Ron or my mom or somebody driving by, it would appear to be a relatively non-serious accident.
Actually, when you drive by, what it looked like is a single vehicle that maybe lost control, slid off into the grass, and just came to a stop.
Looked like not much.
It looked like not much.
I mean, when you
at all.
Pulled up, what did you think? Another nonsense call, she's probably fine, and we'll get him out and get out of here.
Pretty much.
Okay.
Pretty much. But, you know, we were, when this call came in, our system in Fort Worth, we were at level zero. We had 911 calls holding. We had, we were right on top of this call when the call came in. And when we arrived, that's exactly what we did. We did our scene size up. Well, we have, it's just an ambulance is what we have in our EMS system, and we have to wait for fire to arrive. And at this time, we, like I said, we were right on top of it. So when we pull up and there's a single vehicle in the median, essentially there's no way for us to block it on a you know, 4-lane interstate traveling both ways of traffic.
Let me pause you for a minute. So Jack, what I've been thinking more and more lately, and sometimes my thinking's a little outlandish, but should we even get on the roadway on an interstate, not a local road like Ron's talking about, but if there's a freeway incident, should maybe all units stage and then we respond up there together to protect? I mean, I've been thinking about it lately. Maybe we don't send a 2-person ambulance up on the highway when cars are zipping by at 60, 70 miles an hour.
Well, I think that comment has validity, and in some areas that's exactly what they do now, is they send a unit on to investigate the scene if the information that they're receiving from the public through the 911 system is not detailed enough to let them know what they're going to find. The Pennsylvania Turnpike is a good example. With limited access, once you commit apparatus to that roadway, you're taking them out of the frontline service for 30 minutes to an hour minimum just to be able to make a turnaround and come back into their first drawn area because of the few interchanges that are available.
On the other hand, if you got a serious patient, someone's bleeding and they're bleeding hard, or someone's unconscious,
right,
that's
you can't
a
lay back. You can't delay
exactly.
The service.
Yeah.
Well, and this is, you know, my point of view on that is when we pull up, like this particular incident, to the eye, when it's pouring down rain, my initial scene size up was, I have one patient, minimal damage, there was no other vehicles. You could not tell she hit anything. It wasn't until we grabbed our bags, stepped outside, and I was in water up to my knees, that I got close to the vehicle, noticed the patient was still in the vehicle, still restrained, screaming hysterically, not knowing if, you know, she's in pain or if she's just scared.
Or
and
just
then,
panicking, right.
And then we notice this huge, you know, 100-foot light pole that she hit. So then it becomes a whole nother, you know,
because of the mechanism of injury. She had trauma. Okay,
absolutely.
Go ahead.
Absolutely. And, you know, basically, you know, at that point you're thinking, well, you know, do you go get back in the ambulance or do you, that is a touchy subject. In fact, I've lost a lot of sleep over that, wishing that we had the resources when working highway accidents to stage for until we have appropriate blockage. Which,
but who's going to do that?
Nobody.
You know, I can speak to both sides. On the other hand, they call you and say, I'm getting multiple phone calls, a lady's on the cell phone, she's screaming, her kid's unconscious. Who's going to wait?
I mean,
in your town, how long is it going to take you to get a cop car there?
Well, and especially if we're at level zero, that's the thing. Almost always you arrive and police is already on scene. When we're at level zero and I'm on top of it, I'm it. And you've got to address your patient. You can't just let them sit there. What if they're critical? What if they're screaming in critical?
So this ties into the risk. And Ron, and some of your comments in your commentary and some of the other stuff on the blog, you talked about firefighters being upset when they're not necessarily acknowledged as heroes and things like that. But here we have another example, and it happens thousands of times every day, when a crew does arrive on the scene, has to operate on the highway. There's people driving by 67 miles an hour not paying attention. I mean, people are on cell phones, like they said, eating chicken, doing their makeup, shaving. People are not paying attention, and that's why so many fire departments and firefighters and EMS personnel are operating on highways scared to death and saying, screw it, we're going to block the highway. Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
We're back on Through the Smoke. We're talking with some folks on the issue of operating on the highways, firefighters operating on the highways. And I've got Ron Cole, and I've got Selena and Jack, about Jack Sullivan, and Selena from Texas, who's a paramedic who was struck on the highway. Let's give Ron a few seconds. Ron, you want to comment on some of the stuff you've heard in the last couple minutes?
Well, okay, people driving by at 70 miles an hour, that's idiotic, because if you see emergency vehicles, you should slow down.
Yes, exactly,
okay,
they don't. How do we get them to do that?
Well, I don't know. You might want to fire a weapon at them.
That has been suggested.
That has happened.
I mean, I'm not kidding you. You know, something like that, a paintball or something. I mean, you know, these are...
Yeah, they wreck the car.
But there's only other two other points that I want to make, because I got a lot of the heat static on this on the emails. But I alluded to the point where I'm looking out my office window and I saw these 14-plus vehicles. And I said 14 because I couldn't lost... It was like a litter of puppies. I couldn't count them all. Vehicles that accumulated there to fish a body out of the water. Now, they couldn't have all been dispatched. That would have been impossible. I can't imagine the circumstances and with any dispatcher would send that many vehicles. Now, but people also didn't read in my column is that the nature of the suicide was well documented in newspapers the day it happened, and then they were looking for the body the next day, and then I guess it was 2 days later the body washed up. Everyone knew this woman was going to wash up there, so it wasn't anything like, oh, we found a drowning victim or something like that. Okay, so anyway, the point happens. Also, there's many people drowned in Lake Erie in our area. There's almost like one a week in the summertime or something. I don't know. It's been a lot in the paper lately anyway.
Maybe you guys ought to shoot life jackets out to them instead of paintballs.
There's a point. A lot of people swim on unguarded beaches, and a lot of people really don't know how to swim, and they go out in a lake and there's drop-offs and things like that. Okay. Now, the point being, this is always on television, you know, film at 11 sort
right.
of thing. And you can always see there's a handful of guys show up. Okay, six guys maybe come up in there. They put the body in a stretcher and they go out.
Right.
Well, in this particular case, it was a reaction or response unlike anything I could ever conceive of. Now, I mentioned that in my editorial. I'm saying, I got to believe that there was someone just listening to a scanner, picked it up and says, hey, go, let's take a look. Because I just can't believe they would dispatch.
That's pretty typical of the cops. You get one cop and he'll report, and then the sergeant comes, then the captain, and a couple other cops. But, we can't be responsible for them.
How many fire units
were there?
Pardon me?
How many fire units?
Oh, a lot. I said, why do you need all these pumper trucks? Who can ladders? You know, these are big vehicles.
Yeah, right.
And I say, why do you need them all there? But there's another part. Individual fireman or firefighter thinks I'm attacking them personally, okay, and I'm not. Obviously, it's a quality of supervision, what the local protocol is, and all that sort of thing. Every person that wrote to me took this as a personal assault on their psyche, and I think that...
Well, and you know what? And to some extent, you and I as writers have to accept that. When we write something, and we're attacking or commenting or even nudging a particular group, we have to be ready for them to respond back. And when you, as a writer, write to a group, you're seeing it that way. But when someone reads it, they're reading it as if you're addressing them because you're saying the word firefighter, and they go, hey, that's me.
Yeah.
So you're talking about me.
But
how dare you talk about me, sir? You know, that kind of attitude kicks in.
Here's another case. Why did one or two firefighters pick this up, put it on the web, and circulate? We don't circulate to firemen. I didn't really intend this for a fireman to read this. And yet it's blasted through the nation more than anything I've ever
heard. Sure did, yeah. Well, it was good. What it did was it made us think, I think because of what you wrote, more fire departments are going to be conscientious about blocking the highway. So I think there is a side effect that this worked on.
Yeah.
But your comment was, you were concerned about firefighters and their psyches and their hysterical responses. And
it was. It was very, very hysterical. It was so shocking.
The firefighters who read this, and many of them forwarded to me, I've probably gotten about 9 different people, have you seen this? And I wrote and I said, yeah, I've seen it, and the gentleman's good enough to get on the program and talk to us about it. But firefighters read it personally. Or actually, if you belong to a selective group, if you read an article saying all engineers wear pocket protectors and aren't real good at thinking or real anal, you're reading that as it's being personalized to you, and that's the response, and that comes with the territory.
But
if you're
going
to write a piece like that and comment on it, you know, you got broad shoulders. You can take it, right?
Right. I can take it. And
okay.
I've read all those things about engineers. In fact, my favorite bugaboos in the Wall Street Journal are always talking about MBAs being brilliant people and ignoring the fact that engineers can think too.
Yeah.
But it doesn't raise my blood pressure when I read that.
Average firefighter who read what you had to say, the average firefighter probably said, you know what, at some point this guy has seen some minor accidents that probably there was a little bit too much equipment in there. But I'm guessing the average firefighter is saying, you don't understand the big picture. And that's why I have Jack and Selena on here today. Let's revert back to Selena and let you finish your comments, Selena. We're going to start wrapping up the show in just a couple minutes.
Okay. Well, basically, in reference to the motor vehicle accident that I was working on scene, we literally, after arriving on scene, maybe just a few seconds later, had one fire apparatus arrive. And typically, you know, they would stage and block us vertically in one lane, which is the inside lane. If we would have had a second apparatus on scene, our particular incident would have never happened. We were 45 seconds away from our second apparatus arriving that would have provided horizontal blockage, which then would have slowed down traffic, and if traffic did not slow down, they would have hit the engine or the quint, which is the fire apparatus. So basically, although her injuries were minor, it's our job and our duty to attend to that patient, and we are not doctors. We have to assess them to the best of our ability and get them extricated from the vehicle, get them transported to the hospital safely. We need assistance and adequate blockage in order to be able to do that. And I'm not even focusing necessarily on our safety. Think about the safety of the patient. Ron, what if you were involved in that accident and maybe you just had a broken leg? Well, I'm sure you could get up and hobble on one leg. Well, do you need an ambulance? Maybe not. What about the people that need to assess you and make sure you don't have any other injuries? What if you have a head injury and you don't know that you're injured? There's all kinds of things that kind of go into play where we need the people to respond. If that were you, what if we didn't have adequate blockage and you were the one struck, even if it wasn't EMS personnel or it was both? And in our case, our patient was ejected from the vehicle on the second impact and almost killed. And so it's a big public education issue with, you know, I think that, yes, everyone needs to slow down. Yes, they need to yield to emergency vehicles. And on the interstate in Fort Worth, our posted speed limits are 70. Well, to everybody, that's the beginning speed, usually, on interstate.
And that's everywhere. I drive all over the place, you know, talking to fire departments and doing some seminars and traveling, and I'll do 70, 75, and some clowns pass me a 90. Hell, half the time it's a police car passing me. There's no lights on or nothing. There's another article for you to write about, Ron.
Right. Well, and Ron, you mentioned that, you know, you see these accidents. They look like fender benders. They look like minor collisions. The majority of them are. But, you know, really, it's you can't determine that. I know when I go on a scene, usually because of statistics, I can usually determine what type of injuries and sometimes what type of level it's going to be if I need more assistance, more help. You know, but not always. And you need to understand that sometimes when the apparatus arrives, they're there not only for EMS personnel, but they're there for the public. They're there for the bystanders that just have to be there. And there's a whole another big picture that even when it comes to fender benders, you can't really think just because the vehicle is not damaged to an accordion crush that it's not something that needs that many people.
And no one knows that better than you, Selena, from the situation you went in.
Absolutely.
We're involved in and stuff. Jack, any reflections? What we're going to do is give each of you about 30 seconds in a minute, but I want to give Jack a few more minutes to comment. Jack's sort of the architect for us in the fire service, as far as I'm concerned, on how we should be operating safely on the highways. And I'll tell you, Jack, and to Ron and Selena, but Ron specifically, years ago, we'd be on the highway, our ambulance would transport, and we'd hang around and chat for a while. We used to do that. These days, no way. As soon as we can get off the highway, either me or one of the other bosses, we're out of there. We're scared to death to be on those highways. Jack?
And I think what Ron is seeing, I hope anyway, is part of the education effort that's been going on for the last 5, 6, 7 years to try and make emergency services personnel aware of the issue, what's happening around the country and not just in their own neighborhood, what the dangers are, and more importantly, what the best practices are. And that best practice involves additional apparatus to provide for scene safety, not necessarily just taking care of the patients, but taking care of the responders and the patients, and trying to do the best thing for the motoring public so they can move past the scene safely without endangering the other folks that are on the scene. And I think what I would challenge Ron to do at this point is, you know, another article or commentary on your part, Ron, to address the motoring public and their lack of respect for emergency services personnel, whether they're fire, EMS, or law enforcement, and the fact that they don't slow down and move over as they approach an emergency scene is what's causing us to be very defensive about the way we position apparatus and take steps to protect our personnel and the injured victims from some of these incidents. And the last comment I would make is, the subtitle to some of the training programs I do is, it was just a routine call. The incidents that block the highway with the original accident are not where our people are being struck. Our people are being struck at those minor, what we tend to call routine incidents, where we tend to let our guard down a little bit and we don't take the steps necessary to protect our personnel. And we have to do it every time we go out there.
You know, Ron, I liked your paintball idea. I don't think it would go over real well with my boss. I can tell you I've seen more than once a firefighter toss something at a car racing by and almost get struck. We obviously can't operate that way, but maybe sometime in the future we can get legislation passed where we can shoot something at people driving by. But unfortunately right now we can't. Hopefully we've given you a little perspective. Ron, how about a few comments?
Well, okay, you won't like this, but...
I'm ready.
It's the last thing I had written on my notes here, and that is, work expands to consume the money budgeted for it. Now, okay, that sounds pretty crass, but Billy, as I said in the written documentation I sent you,
sure,
our situation in big cities is a little different than it is in rural areas, and that is, there's a big tax base, the money all piles in, and everybody wants a cut of it. And in our particular area, our county is about 20 miles by 30 miles in dimension, roughly a rectangle. There's more than 54 municipalities in that area, and each of them generally has a pumper, a hook and ladder, and an ambulance. And for the most part, they don't go on fire calls. And I'm saying it's within that framework that I launched my essay.
Sure, within your local, there used to be a lot of waste and not a lot of calls, and they're probably not sharing resources.
Our local paper is trying to get a dialogue going with people about how to consolidate some of these forces. And I tell you, it goes over like a lead broom. They don't even want to talk about it.
Yeah, it depends. And maybe, as you wrote to me, maybe the union's trying to look out for their own interests or whatever the case may be. But
definitely,
I'm not a fan of government.
Yeah.
Right? And I've worked in government 32 years. But once they solve the waste in the school system, once they solve the waste in parks and recreation, once they solve the waste in the utilities departments, and once they solve the waste in even the police department, then I think it's worth taking a look at some waste in fire departments. I'm pretty critical of what we do in our business, whether it be in my own organization or nationally. And I'm telling you, and the numbers would reflect it, there's waste out there. But, and you did write this to me, and I'm going to acknowledge that, they need to look at schools before they look at anything else. At least that's my opinion. So
right,
if we're talking about government waste, there's a big difference between government waste
and
our personnel being protected on the highway.
The schools are worst of all.
I think we'd all agree with that, and
yeah,
most firefighters would as well.
Yeah.
The community I live in here down in southwest Ohio, you know, great school system, but we've got fountains and flat-screen TVs. And, I mean, it's ridiculous.
In our local suburb, we have a television studio and an AstroTurf football field.
Yeah, I mean, and the families want this and that. But before you as a writer or anybody else goes targeting, and you have a right to do whatever you want, as I do, targeting firefighters, blocking roadways, there's a whole lot of other problems out there that need to be looked at. And that's kind of where I'm coming from. Jack, 30 seconds, final comment.
No, I think we've covered it all pretty well. Our folks are in danger every time they step foot out of the fire apparatus on a roadway. Doesn't matter whether it's a two-lane road or a four-lane freeway. And we've tried to push the awareness level to get people trained to take the steps to protect the scene when they respond to these incidents, whether they appear minor or major. And I think what Ron's seeing is the result of that and some of the staffing issues that Billy addressed earlier.
Okay, Selena, final comment, 30 seconds.
Well, I think that there definitely is more a more efficient way to work accidents on the roadways. However, it pretty much does involve the public, and until the public is aware and educated to the dangers that public safety personnel, you know, face every single day, even working their families, themselves, and other people, then it's not going to get any better, and we're going to have to utilize our resources and block the roadways. It's the only way to keep everybody safe.
Long comment, 30 seconds.
Me?
Yep.
Oh, okay. I think what you ought to look at is drug use among drivers of 18-wheelers, truck drivers on drugs. Because we have a lot of 18-wheelers hitting vehicles of various types around the place. But I think part of what you're seeing is that, but maybe not. But that's my final comment.
Okay, well, you know, we can't look at that. We can't shoot paintballs and other stuff. What we have to do, though, is like right now in the middle of this broadcast, my crew's got toned out for a highway accident. So we have to go into an environment that we can't control, whether it's a kid on drugs or it's an 18-wheeler on drugs. And I guess if 18-wheeler drivers on drugs is a problem, I'll watch for your next editorial on that one. Mm-hmm. And we'll make sure the truckers get that so you can get on the trucker radio show, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't control our environment. Sometimes we can, but in most cases we can't. Firefighters are going into buildings. We don't know what's in those buildings. Now, we pre-plan, but that can change. The people inside buildings can change what's in there, and boom, we have an explosion. We respond to a house, and we don't know that they added a room to this house. There's a fire, we have a collapse, and we get in trouble. Same thing on the highway. We have no idea what that next vehicle is going to be. We have no idea the condition. Like you said, that 18-wheeler driving, I mean, that was a great point you made. You got a truck driver on drugs. We can't control that. So we've got to protect our personnel when we get on the highway, and highway or even local roads, and that's why you see fire departments blocking the roadway. Part two of that is, in many cases, fire departments are woefully understaffed. They're cutting us. And we're trying to do the job with a lot less people than is required. So clearly in your area, again, I can't speak for the staffing in those departments and how they're using their resources, but in many and most fire departments, I would say, even the big cities, they're trying to do the job. You wrote into me about in your area that the job in the fire service is relatively easy without pressure. I'd have to argue with that. There is downtime. There's no question about it for firefighters. But when we go from downtime to uptime, it makes up for all that downtime. And trust me, I see it over and over and over. A friend of mine this weekend responded to a crash out on Long Island. It was downtime. They responded. They got there. It was a horrible crash on the Meadowbrook Parkway. It was a limousine and a drunk driver collided going the wrong way on this highway. What my friend and his crew saw when they got there is the mother of this this girl in this car sitting on the side of the road holding the decapitated head of her daughter. Okay, I mean, it was a horrendous crash. That's not a job without pressure. That's a high-pressure job, and will take these firefighters months, if not years, to get over it. So understand, when firefighters respond back to you in the stressed manner in which they wrote to you and not properly spelling words and things like that, they take it personally because they understand when on the highways, we can't get, and Ron, your comment about truck drivers and others perhaps being on drugs is a problem. We can't control it. If we could, we probably wouldn't have to block the highways as much as we do. We'll be back in just a minute for final comments.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Well, we've spoken this afternoon or this evening or whenever you listen to the show to Ron Cole, who runs a website and has provided commentary regarding his concerns on how fire departments and other public safety personnel operate on the highways and block roadways, and his concerns about staffing issues and things like that. His website is, what's your site there, Ron?
Oh boy, let's see if I go from memory. https://... machinedesign.com.
Yeah, machinedesign.com. I think if they just search machinedesign.com.
Machinedesign.com. And if you want to go right to the blog, it's /EVE.
Okay. So your comments, and we appreciate the time you took to be on here today. We had Jack Sullivan, who I consider the nation's expert on highway safety incidents for fire and rescue personnel. And Jack, we appreciate all the good work you've been doing. And Selena Schmidt from Fort Worth, Texas, MedStar EMS, which is the 911 EMS provider down there. Selena, we wish you the best on a quick recovery, and our prayers are out to you for what you've been going through out there.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in again to Through the Smoke on Firehouse.com. We welcome your input, your comments. If you want to write to us, and I'll forward your comments to any of the folks that we had on the show today, just write to us at radio@firehouse.com. We look forward to seeing you, many of you, in Baltimore in a couple weeks at Firehouse Expo. Word is they're going to want us to do a couple shows and some forums from there as well, so we hope to see you there. Safe travels, be safe, block the highway, protect your personnel. Take care.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.